listener production.
Hello and welcome to The Briefing. Katrina Blowers here. Have you heard of the boomer stare? This is a bit of a tongue-in-cheek trend that's been doing the rounds on socials, but people actually believe it. The idea is that the sometimes vacant look older people will give you is the result of years of exposure to lead in their childhood and formative years.
People who were exposed to more lead in childhood tended to be more disagreeable, especially across the US and Europe. So that was a very robust finding. And then in most of our analyses, they also tended to be a little bit less well-organized when they were adults. They were less dutiful and responsible and conscientious.
So did lead change the personality of an entire generation? That chat is in the second half of this episode. But first, we're going to get into today's headlines with Eleanor Harrison-Dengate. It is Thursday, the 17th of April.
Good morning, Katrina. So Bondi Junction Shopping Centre will reopen today, but it will be for community reflection with no retail trade following the deaths of six people in Saturday's knife attack.
The centre will be quiet. It will allow for reflection to occur as members of the community are able to come and pay their respects.
Elliot Russinow there, who is the chief executive of Westfield's owner Centre Group. Shops will reopen tomorrow.
Meanwhile, the man who was falsely accused by Channel 7 News as the perpetrator behind the Bondi Junction stabbing has threatened a defamation action. Uni student Benjamin Cohen is seeking representation from the same barrister who has previously counselled Heston Russell, Christian Porter and Lisa Wilkinson. The network now has 28 days to respond. More is coming to light today about the 16-year-old who allegedly stabbed Bishop Marmari Emmanuel at Christ the Good Shepherd's Church in Western Sydney on Monday. The boy's dad saying that he'd been seeing signs of increasing, quote, disobedience leading up to the attack. We also know the teenager hasn't gone to school for more than 6 months, and in 2020 he'd been suspended for bringing a knife onto school grounds. He is still in hospital under police guard. We can tell you, though, that Bishop Emmanuel and Father Isaac Royal received non-life-threatening injuries in the attack. Father Isaac has now been released from hospital and Bishop Emmanuel is stable.
Meanwhile, a 19-year-old man's been charged in connection to a riot that broke out following the stabbing. He's been charged with rioting, affray and the destruction of property following a police search at his home yesterday. Two police officers were injured when hundreds of people descended on the church following the attack. Some threw bricks and other projectiles. Police cars were destroyed and six paramedics were forced to take refuge in the church. The man has been refused bail and will appear in court today. More than 70 police officers have been redeployed to Western Sydney to conduct high visibility patrols to maintain community safety. 32 other police are still investigating the riot.
Now, in the wake of all of this, the Communications Minister, Michelle Rowland, is pledging new legislation to take on X and Meta to prevent what she calls devastating social harm after a storm of online lies following those stabbing attacks. She said real-world harm is caused when dangerous falsehoods spread at scale and speed, and that doing nothing is not an option for any responsible government. The new laws would mean platforms could be fined, and they'd be pretty big fines, multi-million dollar fines for hosting misinformation and disinformation.
So this is all after influencers posted a slew of false information this week, including saying that the Bondi attacker was a local Jewish man, another suggesting a mob cut the fingers off the 16-year-old attacker. New South Wales Premier Chris Minn was actually forced to clarify that the boy lost the finger, which was the result of injuries he sustained in carrying out the attack. And this is after earlier this week, the eSafety Commissioner, Julie Inman Grant, used her legal powers to demand X and Meta take down footage of Bishop Marmari Emmanuel being attacked during the live streamed service. She said she was satisfied with Meta's attempt to comply and she's still assessing X's response.
Yeah, so whenever we talk about crackdowns on, you know, any form of media or broadcasting, there are always concerns raised, which the Coalition has raised in this instance in the past, about what these moves could do to squash freedom of speech. And I guess it's difficult because these platforms provide the capability that no other platform can for misinformation and disinformation to spread like wildfire. One way around that is for the platforms to hire more staff and to hire locally. That was actually one of the recommendations of a social media parliamentary inquiry last year, to get platforms to hire more Australian staff. It was actually raised during that inquiry that X didn't have any Australian staff at all. So that was as of a few months ago. I'm not sure whether that has changed now. And we're going to end on a much lighter note. Swimmer Kaylee McEwen has broken the national women's 200-metre individual medley record. That time would have won her gold at the Tokyo 2021 Olympics and last year's World Championships. Good honour. McEwen clocking 2 minutes 06 seconds to win the national title at the Australian Swimming Championships and break Olympic champion Stephanie Rice's 14-year record set in 2009. I wonder how Steph feels about that. I'm sure she's very happy for her. The 22-year-old is hoping to win gold in Paris. The games begin, Eleanor, in 99 days.
Yeah, so McEwen also was asked a bit about something that's been making a little bit of a flurry lately. World Athletics has decided to pay their gold medalists for the first time ever. And I think it's the first time that, a world sporting body is paying medalists rather than usually they don't get paid anything from those kinds of organizations. If athletes get paid anything for getting a medal, it's usually from their home country. So McEwen's said that, she wasn't interested in whether World Aquatics would introduce prize money. Although if you win a gold medal in Australia, you get about $30,000. However, if you manage to get a gold medal and you're from, say, Singapore or Taiwan, you can get up to like $1 million Australian. So if you manage to get one, it's pretty good.
That's amazing, and would, do away with the need to, try and get sponsorship in other ways. We've also got some figures. They've been crystal ball gazing. This data specialist, Grace Note, is one of them. That's released a predicted medal table for the Paris Games. And if it's right, Australia would win 13 gold, 19 silver and 18 bronze medals, which would be our greatest medal haul in 20 years. Maybe they'll be pumped up by the new team uniforms that were unveiled yesterday. I always laugh about this because no matter what design they come out with, and I didn't mind the ones that I saw yesterday. They're a little bit more casual and easy breezy, but there's always a pile on because, for example, the ones in France have been designed by the former editor of Vogue, and I think manufactured by the Louis Vuitton fashion house. Ours are apparently made in China.
I feel like it's every time the Olympics come around and they always say they just look like private school uniforms, which, I mean, they do, but I wish that they had a lot more yellow involved. That's my personal feeling, or gold. I feel like I'm just like, there's always just a lot of focus on the green and I'm like, we literally have gold as one of our Olympic colours. Why don't we amp that up?
Look, all great suggestions for next time. I think we'll add them to the ever-growing list. People love to put their two cents in about this one. Eleanor, thank you so much for joining us for the headlines. We're now going to get into our briefing topic, all about the boomer stare.
Could lead poisoning be the reason boomers are the way they are?
All right, something kind of weird keeps happening to me, and I need to know if it's just me. Am I the only one that's saying polite things to older people in public places, and they just look at you?
That's called the lead paint stare, and a lot of boomers will do it.
I believe that low-level lead poisoning, it can make people mean, okay? I believe that low-level lead poisoning is very prevalent among boomers and is a lot of the reason why so many boomers were attracted to Trump and bought into his meanness.
What else could it be but lead poisoning? They don't listen to logic. They can't listen to reason. They can't figure things out for themselves. They don't drink alcohol. They don't smoke. They don't do drugs. They don't do anything, but they can't think with their own brains. What else could it be besides lead poisoning?
What you just heard was the theory that's been sweeping TikTok, the idea that boomers have been affected by low-level lead poisoning after being exposed to it as kids and while growing up. According to these theories, it makes them mean, a little slow, and without sounding rude, a little dumb. Lead can be found in all sorts of things, toys, cosmetics, soil. But the two big points of exposure historically have been paint and petrol. Like America, Australia moved to ban lead paint in the 1970s, but we didn't ban lead petrol fully until 2002. Acute lead poisoning is seriously nasty. It can cause muscle pains and nausea on the lower end of the spectrum and seizures and comas on the more extreme end. But low-level ongoing exposure to lead can cause more under-the-radar symptoms, things like irritability, learning disabilities, lower IQ, behavioural problems and poor coordination. So the question is, can we blame lead for the personalities of an entire generation? A man who might have the answer is Ted Schwaber. He's an assistant professor at Michigan State University, and he's conducted a study trying to get to the bottom of this very question. Ted, thanks for joining us on The Briefing. Look, first off, tell us about your research. What were you trying to work out?
So I study personality development across the lifespan. And one thing that's really interesting is the factors that might shape a person's personality. I mean, you can imagine why some people are more extroverted or more friendly or more disagreeable than others. And it's an ongoing area of research among a bunch of personality researchers to figure out what exactly causes these differences. And so there's a wide literature on the negative effects of lead exposure on a bunch of different things. So it seems to stunt growth, seems to lead to behavioral problems, seems to be associated with reduced intelligence in adulthood. And so we hypothesized, oh, perhaps lead exposure in childhood might be associated with personality development and kind of would manifest higher levels of lead exposure in childhood with being a more grumpy, less organized, more anxious adult.
Which I suppose you could label or assign those stereotypes to the worst of the boomer generation. Did you find any sort of correlation between lead and personalities?
Yeah, so we actually did find small but pretty pervasive correlations. So people who were exposed to more lead in childhood tended to be more disagreeable, especially across the US and Europe. So that was a very robust finding. And then in most of our analyses, they also tended to be a little bit less well-organized when they were adults. They were less dutiful and responsible and conscientious. And yeah, I think that you can kind of tie this to generational differences, at least in this sort of zoomed out sense, in that certainly there are differences in lead exposure across generations. People who were in Gen X and who are boomers tended to have more lead exposure when they were growing up. And so you could kind of think, okay, maybe this lead exposure would be something that's connecting to their personality when they're a little bit older.
It's quite an interesting kind of hypothesis. And you said that, yeah, you did find these correlations, but maybe not strong enough to kind of definitively say it's lead.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole bunch of reasons why comparing, you know, today's 20-year-olds to people, today's 65-year-olds might have a lot of different confounds. You can't really clearly say, oh, it's the lead exposure, because there are a whole bunch of societal differences. So what we're finding quite robustly in our data set is that there's associations between birth year and person's personality. But I think in general, more broadly, that hasn't always been found in this personality research, that when people have been looking across different generations, looking at personality differences, some studies find differences and a lot of other studies don't find much of a change.
What did your research find when comparing people born before lead exposure was greatly reduced and then after? Could you see any sort of linear difference between the two sets of participants?
Yeah. So the big thing that we were leveraging in this data set is that in the 1970s, there were some legislation to reduce lead exposure in general. And so that is that they basically signed the Clean Air Act in the United States and a lot of other places soon followed. Or what they did was they said, all right, gasoline companies, you have to reduce the amount of lead in your gasoline by a certain date. And so in every county in the U.S., you had a lot of leaded gasoline and then it kind of decreased over time. And so we were able to look at people who were born in each county before the lead was reduced with people born in the same county after the lead was reduced. And so we did find these differences associated with greater maturity of people born after the lead exposure was reduced. So basically, after this Clean Air Act took place, we see the people with less lead in their systems, less lead in the atmosphere, and then kind of a more organized, less disagreeable populace in that county.
And as you said, like, we can't definitively say it's lead or it isn't, but you can't deny how interesting it is that that difference does exist pre-reductions in lead exposure and post. Now, I want to get into the boomer stare. Have you heard of it? And do you think lead could be maybe partly to blame for how our older people in our societies act?
So I actually hadn't heard of it, but I was talking to my wife and she's like, oh yeah, people on TikTok are always mentioning this. It's like this blank, vacant look where they're kind of looking through you. And I'm like, oh yeah, that to me at least seems more like something that just would happen in older adults in general. I think it would be quite a stretch to say, oh, it's exactly the lead exposure that's causing this. But I think certainly, right, if you look at people who are older versus people who are younger, just as people age, they kind of are a little bit different in the way that they converse with other people. I mean, there's some pretty robust changes in personality and intelligence and just cognitive processing as people grow older. And I think that those might, you know, account for a little bit of this boomer stare trend. But I don't necessarily want to say that it's specifically because of lead exposure. I mean, by the time that I'm in my mid to late 60s, I might be having this checked out expression as well. I hope they're not like, oh yeah, he has COVID brain. You know, I don't know.
Hey, good point. That could be the next one we're seeing. Look, you do a lot of research into personalities. What do you make of the generational warfare that we kind of buy into right around the world? It's big here in Australia. I know it exists, obviously, in the US. This boomer stare trend kicked off in the US. Do you think it's fair to stereotype generations and the personalities of people who were born into those generations based on specifically a chunk of time in which they were born?
I mean, I think it's really easy to do, and I think it's really almost feels natural to do it. But for as far back as, you know, you can look at these old newspaper headlines and they'll say, oh, kids these days don't want to work. People were saying that in the 1800s, in the 1700s, in the 1900s. I think there's always going to be a little bit of this generational warfare. And what's hard for me is to kind of figure out from a research perspective, what if this is just due to aging? What if it's due to generations? And what if it is due to, you know, the specific combination of age and generation that a person is growing up in? I don't think that there's much evidence at all for these generational differences in personality. I mean, there's been so much of kind of this boomer war on millennials and Gen Z saying, oh, they're so narcissistic and entitled. And the research doesn't really show a difference there either. Really, the big place where there does seem to be a difference, where if you compare like people today who are 20 with people in 1980 who were 20, with people in 1960 who were 20, seems to be in political attitudes. Today's youth are more liberal and left-leaning across pretty much every English-speaking nation than other past generations were at that same age. So when you kind of bring back the ages and match people up on age, then I think you might actually be able to find some differences. But I'm a little bit worried that the boomer stare is just kind of taking a look at older adults and being a little bit, you know, weaponizing age against people for something that might not be a generational difference when later generations reach that age.
Yeah, look, as you said, it's nothing new, this generational warfare. It's something that has gone on and will probably continue to go on for a long time. But thank you for talking us through your research about lead and explaining why the boomer stare probably isn't all it's cracked up to be. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to today's briefing. That is all for this episode. But before you go, we'd love it if you could share this ep with someone you think might enjoy it. And if you want to keep up with our other content, you can check us out on Instagram at The Briefing Podcast. We're also on YouTube, where full episodes of our weekend briefings go out. We're also on TikTok. For both of those, you can search Listener Newsroom. That's LISTNR. I'm Sasha Barbagat. See you next time. Listener.